This is CliffCentral.com.
Please be aware that this show contains crude and foul language. If you are sensitive to topics like science or religion, we cordially invite you to please fuck off now. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. It is an absolute delight to speak to you this morning, this beautiful Friday in Johannesburg, February the 9th. Ek praat mooi Engels, want ons het 'n Engelse gas later, en ons moet, want hy is van Britannia, so hy verstaan nie 'n fok Afrikaans nie, so we have to speak English more and more as the show progresses. Okay, Hannes?
Yes, I am prepared and ready.
A wonderful English, yes. I love that.
The Queen's English will be speaking.
Yes, because this guy has got a wonderful accent. Mm. We're going to speak later to Jeremy Thompson, who was a newsreader on Sky. Maar ons kan nou 'n bietjie Afrikaans praat, dankie Here. Hallo Gavin.
Hallo Casper, hoe gaan dit?
Oh, sek sa.
Is die pille.
Ooh, wat se pille jy in?
Dis 'n lang storie.
Mhm.
So ek het 'n hoofpyn gehad gister, die migraine slaan my gewone plat. I was in bed, I missed two very important meetings yesterday. En toe, gisteraand, en toe vraag ek vir 'n pynpil, en toe sê Alwina, gaan vir my pilletjie te stoppies op pilletjie in my hand, dit gaan vir my pyn wegslaan, en toe het vir my die pil gee, vir oggend ons wakker word, en toe sê vir my, oogat, ek het vir die verkeerde pil gegee. So we don't know what tablet he gave me, so if anyone can WhatsApp us, and tell us, dis a kapsule,
ja.
Dit is wit,
ja.
En royal blue.
Het jy erection?
No, I don't.
Ons weet wat het nie is nie.
Ja.
Ja. Maar is dat nie een blauw pool nie?
Jy het gesê royal blue.
Royal blue.
Jy het jy nou gesê in jou
Maar Viagra is een mix tussen royal blue en baby blue.
Ek, how do we know?
I from what I've read.
Yes, sir. Jy is nie net bekommerd oor die erectie nie, jy is bekommerd oor die color palette ook.
Yes, indeed.
Gepraat van color palette, ek het die color purple gaan kyk en
ja.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Is it?
Oh, it's beautiful. I cried so much that but people like Bernard and so were laughing. Because they'd never seen me cry like this. And I had snot blowing down my cheeks.
Oh my goodness.
But we're going to have them next week, the cast.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Sorry, but okay, so it's all about me, migraine. Always migraine, Gavin. It's always me.
Wait, I'm confused.
Grain. I'm making a joke about me and grain.
Oh, okay.
You see, that's...
Gavin laat my vandag so 'n bietjie dink aan destyds in Francina Vark. Sy het so 'n hotel gehad, maar een van haar gaste een keer was, ek dink het was Sybrand Slang. En hy het pille vir sy senuwees en pille vir sy jeug. Alles pille gedrink.
Okay, so it's a white pill. If people know, they must WhatsApp. It's a white pill with royal blue connections.
So it's ja, dis wit. Dis half te wit, half te blauw.
Maar waar kry Alwie nou dit?
Kom uit sy sak uit, hy kom van Botswana af gister.
Oh
Botswana,
my god.
So if anybody knows, WhatsApp ons 079-748-2090 asseblief, en sê vir ons wat se pillet ek gedrink.
Hier is een mooi Engels op.
Okay, in English, yeah. For Jeremy Thompson is going to join us a little bit later. 079-748-2090.
Ek dink jy kan later sê so nie. Later is meer soos...
Is dit die komende deel van Britannia?
Werkers, ja.
Later then.
Later.
Yes. Got it.
Please people, WhatsApp us later. Hallelujah. Oh, and we're going to have a beautiful extra special guest for the first time ever on our show, Honest.
Yeah.
That's not Jeremy Thompson.
No.
That is first, we got another guest, and he's a friend of yours.
Yes.
So would you give us some hints?
Well, I
don't say his name.
Okay.
Okay.
I can all 20 jaar.
Oh.
Hy's 'n bietjie van 'n snaakse teddybeer.
Caramello.
Ja, 'n bekende gesig op die kassie.
Baie.
Hy het in 'n straat gebly.
Yes, I gotcha.
Die belangrikste R in
Pretoria straat.
Ja.
En hy het ook, as ek die Engelse woord mag gebruik, veldwerk gedoen. Jare terug onthou ek.
Ja,
veldwerk wat?
Vir kunstcafé.
Kwela.
Kwela.
Ja. 2001, dan het hy altyd so rondgehard op in die gang en ons is besig met Kasper Rasper. En toe weet ek hy werk daar. Because he told me that he knew me from Ventersdorp. Not that I stayed there, he stayed there.
Sure, but what were you doing, Ventersdorp, Casper?
No, he was watching me on the TV.
Okay, jy was in almalse kassie gewees.
Selfs in Rustenburg en Ventersdorp was ek.
Wow.
In die voorkamer.
Oh, wow.
And so that's all the info I've got. But now, before we introduce him, I'm going to play something. Did you know that we have just... I've just seen the news of the day.
Yeah.
That they have released this... verslag oor die melk ding daar in die public protector. Who's that a public protector? Is that something different? Do we know? Our news people. It's quietly releasing the Vrede diary report.
Oh.
It's a dairy. Dairy report.
Where?
Your diary report is something else. It's the dairy.
Mm-hmm.
And they find gross negligence.
Oh.
So I had one. Once I bought my mother a negligence and it was gross and I returned it. Ek sê, my ma kan hierdie negligence nie dra nie. Fucking lele.
Maar dit klink asof 'n skandaal daar oopgevlek gaan word.
Ooh, daar broei iets.
Ja.
Daar broei 'n skandaal.
Net soos die bakterieë in die melk. Broei daar 'n skandaal.
Exactement. But for all the people out there, if you feel a bit depressed, if you feel... what's this? Shut up. If you feel a bit depressed, if you feel... sorry, I'm getting messages here from a fucking...
Yeah, you're like occupied.
Yeah, from my phone.
What messages? Read
no,
them.
That's fine. I've got them. No, he just said, telling me something. He can't do it. And I said, you must do it. And he said, I can't. But I said, you must do it. And
now good. Tell him off.
I won the computer. So I just want to say, I've won over the computer. That if you're feeling in a bad mood, people are giving you cuck. People are gossiping about you.
Yes, that's me.
Looking at you, President Zuma. Then just listen to this and you'll feel much better.
You come to my page throwing shade, and you think you better than me? Never bitch, things that you do, you'll be never rich. Never popping, you'll be never it. You're way at the top of the never list. Never bitch, never bitch. Never ever 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 bitch. Never bitch, never bitch. Never ever 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 bitch. Hold up, it's the blonde bomb scare. Pretty. Long blonde hair, witty, you don't compare. If you ain't from my city, then you don't come here. I was zipping out the launch pad, sitting with my comrades. Fight back, killer diamond, lifting up my wine glass. Toast to forever, bitch. Bro, never, bitch. I never fear hoes. If I had to wear that, I'd never wear clothes. You birds are scared crows, and I am legendary. You beating me, I'll be the first to never worry, bitch. Never, bitch. Things that you do, you'll be never rich. Never popping, you'll be never it. You're way at the top of the never list. Never bitch, never bitch.
Never, 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 ever, ever bitch. Never bitch, never bitch. Ah, voel soveel beter, julle ook, né? So, did you work out who's our special extra guest? Het julle uitgewerk wie is ons extra special gast? Ek het. Hy is hier, hy is lewendig, hy is ons
extra.
Wat? Ja? O God, special. Oh. I mustn't do this when Jeremy is here, hey, because it will be so
embarrassing.
Ja, but someone's put this on the wrong thing. Okay. Extra guest is Mel Sieberhagen.
Yay.
And I want to say welcome, Melt. Ek wil sê welkom, Melt.
Ach, ek wil sê baie dankie, Kasper. Dit is so lekker om hier te wees.
Uiteindelik, ne?
Ja. Ja, dit het lang genoeg gevat om vir Melt hier so te kry.
I think Greg did. Melt, baie, baie welkom. En jy is hier, want morgen aand is jy in Pretoria.
Ja, ons is in die oostelike voorstede vir die groot komedie extravaganza.
En wat is dit?
Die naam daarvan is die Kings and Queens of Comedy.
En is ek a king of a queen?
Jy is comedy.
Ek is.
Good answer.
Yeah, and very quickly.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Blitz. Very quick, very quick. So ja, morgen aand is die Kings and Queens comedy, daar is van almal en nog wat in die program. Het jy name?
Daar's Kasper de Vries, daar's Hannes Brimmer.
En Melt Sieberhagen.
Daar's 'n paar girls ook. Ons het vir Leander Reddy.
Ja.
En dit is vir Krija Govender. En Kanisa is daar so.
Ja.
En dan staan die hoe kan ek sê, die ou ballies, Dr. Riyad Musa. Ja. Ons het vir wie, Ellen Committee is die host.
Is Ria die host?
Ellen gaan net grapjes
gaan. Ek sit grapies met al die informatie voor my. Ons het jou nou eindelijk net getoets.
Ja,
kijk, ek het ook ken jy.
En daar is ook, Joey Rashdien en Mark Lattering op diezelfde hoog, wat het nooit gebeur.
Ja. Help us.
Hoe gaan mense weet wie is wie?
Oh. Want hulle gaan die lichte aan.
Ja, so dit is tussen sy, nee. Dit is een sluitende Riyad, 16 komediante, en dan nog een speciale gasverskyning dier Morgan. And beatbox ook. So this is like a full.
And we listened to his stuff, it was quite good.
It's nogal indrukwekkend.
Ja, ek is heeltemal ek gaan glad nie enige rapperige ding doen nie. Ek nou ek hom gehoor het nie. So would you think he's going to come up every now and then and do like for people to rest, do beatboxing? Is that what's going to do? We don't know.
Good
question. What time does the show start? 8 o'clock.
It starts at 8 o'clock. It's at the Sun Arena, Times Square, Menlyn Main.
Goodness.
Dit is nie 'n mine soos waar hulle Delft
is. No.
Soos waar jy bly is, as die krag afgaan.
Yeah. Wat 'n mine, man.
Yeah.
En hoeveel is die kaartjies?
It starts at...
Tickets from 150 rand.
Ja!
Die show is PG-16.
Okay. Yeah. Wat gaan julle vertel? Hoekom is dit 16? Ek sou dink 13 of 12.
No, but we use swear words.
Oh.
So that's why.
You use swear words.
I don't. I don't.
Oh, is it?
No. I never swear.
Good.
I say this because my special guest has arrived. I see he's here. So he must think that I don't swear. Please.
Okay, good.
Otherwise, he's going to run away.
Okay.
Ek moest het eindelijk nou in Afrikaans gesê het.
Ja.
Fokken gehoor dat ek gesê het. Oh, well. You know who else is here?
Who else is here, Casper?
Chimonet. Hallo Chimonet.
Hi Casper.
Where's Chimonet from?
Health insurance.
You're right. One plan. Pet insurance.
Ja,
health is for the mens.
Well, yeah.
And remember that we got a competition running, and we told the listeners to send us pictures of themselves and the dogs or cats, their pets. And they can win something if they look very much like their pets. So we got the winners here. Chimonet, gaan jy vir ons vertel wie is wie? En dan kan ons bietjie kommentaar lewer op die foto's.
Okay, awesome. So we've got the three guys. That's
But the first three. Number three first.
Okay, yeah. So in third place, it's Rainer May with his most beautiful French bulldog.
Okay, let's have a look there. Is that a French bulldog?
That's a Frenchie, yes.
Wow.
Oh, it looks like a Boston Terrier with a problem.
So apparently he's got his own Facebook page.
Well, the hond of Rainer?
No, the dog.
Yeah, it's Rainer's is a bit lot.
He's got two Frenchies. He's got a black one, and this one in this picture is white and brown.
Oh. They do look alike, I must admit. No?
Yeah, they do.
But see in the same.
Yeah.
Is Rainer the only one?
And then we got number two. Who can what does Rainer win?
Okay, so he just won 3 months free pet insurance for his dog.
Wow.
Can you see my tail wagging? Wow, that's amazing. Okay, and so number two, that is a lady and a cat.
Yeah, and this is Priya Naidu.
Okay.
And she won 6 months free pet insurance.
Wow. Oh.
Prior, you would have won if you had a little dot on the cat's forehead as well. Because it's, you look, the eyes are the same, eh?
Yeah, they do.
It's beautiful. Beautiful. So Prior won 6 months.
Free pet insurance from one plan.
Wow, that's very good. She's very fortunate.
Mm.
And then we got... the winner is here. And look at this. Two little, I don't know what you call
these. Okay, so this is the first place is Marius Cornelissen.
Cornelissen.
Yes, with his miniature schnauders.
Oh, is that
yes,
what the letters?
They miniature schnauders. And wow. Look, and look at the beards. They look exactly
the same. Agreed.
And he won 500 Rand cash plus 1 year free pet insurance for one pet.
My 1 year, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Can we try and get him on the phone? Okay? And then we can talk to him, because this is amazing.
But the amazing thing is, in the photo that we've got here, his cat is in the background as well.
His cat looks
a little bit like him as well.
The cat, the cat is photobombing, basically.
Yeah. we did not even see that.
Marius, kan jy ons hoor? Hi, Marius. Welcome by the show.
Baie dankie.
Is jy opgewonde? Jy het gewen.
Vreeslik, ja.
Dis amazing, maar hulle is slim, nee, want hulle gee net vir die een pet nou insurance vir 'n jaar.
Oh dear, wat vir die ander vyf?
Jy moet hulle nou inskryf. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So wanneer het jy jou foto ingestuur?
Dit was to ons die influencer. Die influencer and their pets gehad het.
Okay, well, dat sien jy. Ek wil net vir mense daar buite sê, try and enter competitions, you never know. Kyk wat het nou gebeur met Marius. En, ja, en nou, jou baard kleur jy om volgens jou schnauzer kies? Of?
Nee, dit is natuurlijk, want ons kan nie naar die selle stylist toe nie. So, dit is een natuurlijke look, ons het nie probeer om na mekaar te lyk.
So, jy sê al die dieren, so jy het baie dieren, want ons het nou net die kat daar achter jou gesien.
Ja, die kat is een bietjie van het dood.
wat sy naam? Zuma? Sorry.
Sy naam is Magneto, actually.
Oh, wow.
Magneto,
nice.
Maar hy sê daar, helemaal happy. Ek hou daarvan as honde en katte oor die weg kom. Ek love dit.
Ja, twee katte, twee honde.
Fantastisch.
Chewbacca en Han Solo, die twee honde, en Trini en Magneto, die katte.
Ja, jy het duidelijk nogal een voorliefde vir populaire kultuur, luister na die naam.
Ja, dis een fout. Dis een probleem van my.
Just come again, what's the names?
Chewbacca.
Ja.
En
Han Solo.
En Han Solo.
Oh, ja.
Magneto.
Okay.
X-Men.
Oh, ja, is die X-Men. Okay, ja. Hannes, jy is baie wakker.
Ek probeer.
Ja. Ek tel het nou eers op, ek is so stupid. Marius, so die gelkies vir jouself.
Yes.
Gebruik om, treat yourself. En dan, die een, Chewbacca of Han Solo, het... insurance die ander eenetjie moet maar versigtig oor die straat loop vir nou.
Die ene is meer accident prone, so fine.
Sit hom eers op die ding, ja. Sit hom op die pakket. Maar baie dankie dat jy met ons gepraat het, en Chimene, het jy nog iets om van Marius te sê?
Nee, so ons sal in contact met jou wees, en ons sal van daar af reel vir jou pet
insurance. Baie dankie, ja.
Okay, Marius.
Goed
gaan. Okay, bye. Oh, that was nice, Marius. Klink nice, nee. Ek dacht eerst hy skam, maar hy was net sag.
Ja, dis die mic, dis ons mics.
Mm. Ok, so that's that, Chimene, dankie dat jy kom inloer, he.
Dankie, Kasper, dankie, Gavin.
Dit is een plezier.
Sien julle weer.
Awesome.
Binnenkort. En Melk, het jy hondjies of kuikies?
Ek het een kuikie.
Weet jy wat hierdie is?
Ek het gesien nou.
It's 130 a month, Melk.
133.
Ja, maar 130 is beter.
Daar extra 3, gooi my, daar extra 3 maak het en net helemaal.
I'm just selling it. I'm selling it, it's 130.
Ek bly in die kamer, op hierdie stadium gee ek al my geld uit op water.
Ah, shame. But tonight is going to rain, you know that.
Het hulle al gebid?
No. Papa Sean and I, no, they haven't, but it's coming. Tonight at 7, it's going to rain in the Cape.
So, as het vanavond reen, gaan Angus en gaan, ja, maar ek het al
gebid. Ek
het
gebid.
Ja,
hy het a direct message dan gestuur.
Ja.
It's really going to rain tonight, and but there's a lot of stories about why it's not raining. And Gavin, I saw that there was someone who in the Cape said it's not raining because the Morphies.
Mavis van die Leivers.
Wat het gebeur?
So basically, Mavis. Daar's a. I don't know as hulle vir Angus. Kijk, Angus is ons nou baie. Dis ons nou algemeen dat hy is very homophobic, right? Mm. En al in Angus het in sy onderhoud aan Houston die volgende sê, al die sinners, dis julle skuld. Dat God kwaad is vir die Kaap en jy moet repent en jy moet begin bid en jy moet erken dat jy sondaars is.
En toen Mavis, it's a guy a sinner then,
ja,
according to them.
Yes. En toen Mavis van die Leivers wat sy is baie famous, sy is a soort van a Facebook celebrity. Mm. And if you appreciate colored and everything colored and Cape Townian colored, and then you follow her on Facebook. En toen sy gesê,
tell me what she said.
Wat is die dokter vir wie sy werk? Wat sy altyd oor, sy werk moest vir die dokter.
Wie? Mavis?
Mavis, ja, is altyd die dokter wat allerhande goeders vraag, en sy is nogal bietjie mond uitspoel oor hom partykeer.
Oh, well, where? On Facebook?
Op Facebook. Sy is, rarig mense, gaan volg vir Mavis van die Leivers. Sy is fantastisch.
Hoe stam is hy Leivers?
Leivers is L, ja, so Bishop Leivers, L-A-V-I-S.
I'm gonna do that.
Mm-hmm. Marvis van die Laughers, basis.
To say, I no blame Angus Buchan, Oscar Bougart en Greta Park, Parkie Gras, die Kaapse Moffies vir die Kaapse droogte. My oma het altyd gesê, Kaapse Moffies is baie skoon mense.
Ja.
Maar my vraag is, hoe die fok maak die Moffies die, met al die water? O, wat die fok maak die Moffies met al die water?
Exactly, want is nou weg.
Ja.
So die Mollas het dit gebruik.
Yes.
Hulle gaan gebad, toe dit die toilet gaan gooi, en toe dit op die maderiffies yes. En die pansies in die tuin gaan gooi, en nou is alles weg.
En al die foam parties.
Well, from tonight, hopefully Cape Town, if it does only rain for a while, then Angus, ek, Tony Agnes, moet dan weer teruggaan.
En die grootste mystery is nog steeds precies hoe spreek met sy vanheid. Is het Buchan, Bakken, Bakken?
Is het Bakken of Buchan?
Bakken.
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 Did you hear a voice, ladies and gentlemen? So did I. My God, where did you come from, Shemaine?
I'm sitting inside working on something else.
Oh, nice to see you.
And I miss you guys. I feel like my spot is not taken well.
Well, it's going to be taken soon.
Oh, good.
But, so Bakken.
Yeah, the mad priest.
Ah.
Yeah.
No, you don't want to talk about
it. The qualifications, né?
Exactly.
I don't know. No,
ja,
this
in the fields.
Yeah. In the aardappels.
Yeah.
No, he's quite silly actually.
Indeed.
That's an understatement. Come on.
Daar was gister op Facebook het so prentjie hier rond te gedoen van Angus se gesig wat gesuperimposes op Angus Young van AC/DC. Met een van ons vriende op gereply het face like potatoes.
Face like potato.
Bye-bye, julle.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lekker om jou te sien.
Dankie, Shemaine. Lekker werk, hoor. Shemaine. As jy uitgaan, ek het gesien, Jeremy is hier.
That gorgeous man, sitting with the...
Jy moet Afrikaans praat, hy fok kan verstaan jy. Vraag vir hom, of as hy wil, kan hy so lang inkom, en dan ons join.
Okay.
As hy nie omgegeen nie.
Ek sal so maak.
Want anders sit hy net hier rond.
Ek sal so maak.
And then we can introduce one another, and we can just chat.
Okay, ek sal so maak.
Vraag vir hom of hy wil.
Vertrouw jy my met so a gorgeous man?
Wat gaan jy met hom doen? Ga jy my toilets toe vat? Wat gaan die fok gaan jy met hom doen?
Oh God, because I can't do anything. Anyway, let me do that.
Okay, you just try.
Alright.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. What's her name? Shemaine.
No, don't you do that.
I was joking.
Don't do that.
Okay, so while you go out, Shemaine, we're going to listen to a little bit of this. And if you think this is ABBA, you are, in a way, right, but not really.
I think Mel will like this because it's heavy metal. Why do I think he likes heavy metal?
But they do.
I think heavy, but rock.
Yeah.
Rock.
I don't want to talk about the things we've gone through, though it's hurting me. Now it's history. I've played all my cards, and that's what you've done too. Nothing more to say, no more race to play. The winner takes it all, the loser standing small. Beside the victory, this is destiny.
Dit is weird, né, Mel?
Het is lekker, though.
Het is lekker, né?
Ja.
Ja, dat gitaarkies, maar het is nice. The winner takes it all.
Het is nog steeds niet Abba, nie, maar het is close.
Yeah.
Ach ja, maar ik hou daarvan als dat betekent een reworking van een Abba is. Ik loved it.
Je kan baie met Abba doen.
We schrijven verschillende type stijlen en goed. Daar ek het een Indische Abba plaat ook, waar hulle in Indie sing. De super trooper in Indien. En jij ken jij ook aan een weird.
Ek was een keer ook iets wat. Dus ergens op YouTube, maar ik kan het gelukkig niet krijgen. Als mensen met de Afrikaanse gospel song gedoen het op een Abba wijze. En ik denk dat is geld om te maken. Je kan Abba gospel fi.
Abba gospel.
Imagine it, dus Judas Iscariot, wat is verkeerd?
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
En die ander ene wat ek nie kan wag nie, is iemand gaan, Here Jesus, ja, hy gaan ons weer, oor volk, elke Sondag kerk toe.
Ek dink nie dis gospel nie, dit.
Die van gospel.
Here Jesus, hier gaat ons weer. Ek love it.
Oh my goodness.
Ons moet dit uitbring.
My dogtertjie het nou net een fan van Abba geworden. Maar dat is wel het van die kar. Oh, favorite is money, money, money.
Shame, jy sal een ander werk moet krijgen.
Ek het altijd verkeerd verstaan. Okay, kom ons gaan gauw door die woorden. I work all night, I work all day to play the balls I have to play. That's never. But then the second time, money, 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 it's a rich man's world. And done. All the things I could do if you're alone in a witch man's world, and I think say weer iets wat
ja, dat is a man like that is hard to find, but I can't get him off my mind.
And it's sad, yeah?
And if he happens to be free, I bet he wouldn't fancy me. That's too bad. So I must leave, I'll have to go to.
Okay, wait, but don't say it. I always thought, so I must leave, I have to go. To Las Vegas, I'm on a go. What's he say?
Or Monaco. To Las Vegas or Monaco.
Monaco. I'm on a go.
Misheard lyrics.
Yeah, but Abba's songs is actually quite depressing, eh? Goed soos Fernando and die, it is sad. the winner takes it all. Hoe hartseer is dit? Want almal wen behalwe die chick wat sing. Super Trooper. Ek's a showgirl en ek haat my lewe en ek haat my job. Abba is depressing. This is original emo.
But that's Sweden. Swedish. They are depressed people.
Yeah, it's goat.
No.
Listen here.
The Casper Radio Show. Out there.
So julle weet, so elke nou en dan, dan speel ons iets wat out there is. En ek het vir Meld gevra om vir my iets te stuur wat wat weird is for out there. Because you know out there is either fantastic or it is hugely embarrassing. And this I have never heard in my life. Wat Mel toe vir my gestuur het. Mel, just give their name again. It's the
Portsmouth Sinfonia.
What the hell is this?
Dit was a, it started out as a performance art piece and it turned into a bit of a cultural phenomena from 1970 to 1979.
What's this? Oh, it's not that, eh?
No, not quite. But it's professional musicians playing instruments that they can't play.
Oh, yeah, it's crackling. It's professional music. Professional musicians playing music they can't.
Playing instruments they can't play.
Oh my god. Oh. Ah. It's like torture, eh? Torture.
Yeah, and they released a couple of albums.
Let's listen a bit.
Produced by Brian Eno, nogal.
Oh, you need Eno's actually. Mens kan nie te lankie na luister nie, Mel.
Nee, mens kan nie.
What the...
Imagine sitting through an entire album.
Ja.
So, hulle geef hulle die bladmuziek?
Ja, they're professional musicians and then they get an instrument they can't play. Dis is om vir Kurt Darren rechte muziek te laat sien.
Ja!
You give them...
I thought that was my introductory fanfare.
No. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, by the way, we got our special guest as well. We've got two special guests now. Mr. Jeremy Thompson is here. Welcome.
Woo!
You're very kind. I'm delighted to be here. Thanks.
I'm so glad you're here. And you got a book out called Breaking News. We'll talk about that as well. So this is Mel. He's a comedian.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about a show that's on tomorrow. It's like one of those comedy shows where you've got lots of comedians, each doing a 10-minute slot.
Gotcha. Comedy club.
He's going to do Hannes, also one. I used to be funny, not anymore. I'm going to do one.
I've told you still are.
He's going to do, and Gavin is just, he's not anything. What are you, Gavin?
Yes, I'm a fly on the wall.
He's on communication.
No, he's communication, and you did TV.
Yes.
Just, you know, because he doesn't know who you are.
Oh, yes. So I'm in public relations. I've got a PR company, and this is my fun, the side thing that I do.
I may need to talk to you. You know, we got to sell this book now.
It's amazing.
Need a PR.
Yeah.
Actually, Taryn, who's with us from Jacana Media, has been doing a fabulous job for me. So
you must take a picture of me, Gavin, with the book, and then
yes, I will.
Later I'm going to give it to you so that you can sign it for me, Jeremy.
I will.
Please.
Yeah.
And
I need to take a picture.
Got
of
it.
This, book. This is
a moment
of history, really.
A moment in time, actually.
Yeah.
Thank you. Honest, what you said something about Jeremy Tom. Do you remember him from?
It's one of those interesting things in a globalized world. Jeremy, we know you almost as well as our own news readers because we can get Sky News locally. And then you've also made an appearance. I'm sure that if you've been a news broadcaster for as long as you've been, you almost become a part of popular culture as well. So needless to say, I remember you very well from Shaun of the Dead. I'm sure you've... That quote
now,
has been...
I have to say, I spent 50 years as a journalist, 40 years in television news, and I get stopped in the street in the UK for Shaun of the Dead for the legendary appearance there where I advise people to take out the brain or cut off the head is the only way to stop zombies. And what I discovered I was taking part in was a rom-com-zom. No, a rom-zom-com, which is a romantic zombie comedy.
Yes.
Very few around. And Simon Pegg, who made it, is basically, it was an homage to George Romero's Dawn of the Dead.
Yes.
And it turned out to be a brilliant film. I still think it's the best of their sequence they made. And I just, they said, could you read these lines? And I went, God, this could undermine the old gravitas a bit here,
I wondered, does that become a hindrance to the serious news, or is it something fun on the side?
No, you know? In the end, people didn't seem to mind at all. They sort of actually took me seriously saying these words. And in the end, they sort of stopped the zombies, so I guess it worked. And Simon Pegg and Nick Frost were delighted I was in it. And in the end, looking back, I mean, it's the only reason my grandkids talk to me. They don't know about news. They know about Shaun of the Dead, though.
But you actually, you said, you know the line so well because he said, I repeat.
Yes, yes. Because and that it's is reiterated. Like,
everyone knows that line.
And it's just before that now legendary moment where Frost and Peg run out to the garden and start hurling vinyls at the zombies, and they're having to decide their library of vinyls in the garden shed, which ones they throw and which ones they want to keep. I mean, it's just a brilliant piece of comic movie.
He's so good, Simon.
Anyway, I also did some news.
That's nice to know. We're going to speak about the book in depth a bit later, but I just want to ask and see if these people are awake. What is happening today, Melt, that you would say is quite important in the world?
Today in the world? No idea.
You see, he knows. That's why I don't want to... People
trumpeting,
waving, Mr. Thompson.
I think the most important thing today is that there is a promise of rain in Cape Town.
No! -3. No, there is promise in Cape Town. We said so. No, it's the Winter Olympics.
Oh.
It's the start of the Winter Olympics.
Yeah. I'm from the farm in South Africa. I don't know anything about winter sports.
Do we have Winter Olympic athletes?
We've got one. There's one athlete in the Winter Olympics.
Ooh. I can't believe that a talented studio like this wouldn't have put together a South Africa bobsleigh team by now.
Like cool running.
I'll be the bobsleigh.
Yeah. hot runnings.
Yes.
Yeah. Or actually dry runnings. Yeah. You
dry
can call
runnings
it.
For us. Yeah. Yeah, we should have.
We've got one guy there skiing. I know there was a big thing because the SASCOC, the Olympic Committee, there were two guys who qualified, and we could send one.
Why? Because of budgetary constraints.
Probably because of budget. I would love to see him in the opening ceremonies. It's just one guy carrying
with
the flag
and
the team name and everything.
His hands are going to be full. Hopefully he hasn't got his skis with him as well.
His name is Connor Wilson.
You see?
Oh, Connor. God. Good luck, Connor. We hope you're not a goner, Connor.
I'm sure he's listening.
Oh, at least we know his name. We only have to know one name. Connor.
Well, can only go downhill from there. Oh.
He's got a very good and dry sense of humor.
You picked that
up in the book.
Yes.
I must tell you, I laughed, I chuckled a lot. Some very nice humor in that, in the book. Which we'll talk about later, not now. Another fact for the Olympics. What are they doing at the Olympics that they've... No, how do I put this question? They are giving the athletes something more of than they have ever done. What?
Condoms.
Yeah, right.
Is it?
Plus one.
That is condom.
So, you see, it's because athletes, I suppose, they become
it's
like...
a lot of pent-up energy to get rid
of. Yeah. So they give them...
The stories you hear from the Olympic Village are usually rather...
gratuitous.
Yes. It seems like there's a lot of pent-up energy that needs to be offloaded off and... I use offload in the most innocent sense of the word, obviously.
But isn't it a bad thing to offload during like
heavy sport?
Afterwards.
Oh, yeah. Athletes have a lot of superstition about not engaging in sexual activity
before. Not releasing your energy before.
Yeah.
Is it superstition? Like what?
Well, like
it's like you lose energy then.
Yeah. Mm. Like rugby players play with the same underpants for the whole season.
Really?
You know, those kind of... No, I can't say that for a fact.
Mr. Thompson is a big rugby player.
Oh.
So don't talk about rugby.
No, but I'm
rugby.
Just saying that very often athletes have kind of super... This is like my good luck socks or, you know, okay. Maybe... And that's also an element of...
If you're Bucky's Buddha, you've got your lucky fist.
Yeah.
But hear this story. He played for a rugby team. He got a rash. He went to the doctor. And the doctor said?
I was playing up in the Pennines, up in the hills in the north of England, and I was captain of my local town rugby team. We went up to play there against a quite a rural town team. And I, because nobody else was available to play prop, I ended up playing prop that day, although I'm not entirely built to be a prop. I am not Ostu Thompson. You know, quite seriously. But I ended up propping against this very, very big, ginger-bearded farmer boy. And we had a good old tussle and a few beers afterwards. And then on Monday, I got this terrible rash, and I went to see the doctor, and he said, you've got sheep rot. And it had turned out that my opponent, who was a big farmer boy, ran around his farm carrying his sheep over his shoulders, and they left ticks and things. And
oh,
I got
my word.
Which is a bit unusual. Anyway.
Wow.
So that's how... Yeah,
nothing a nice cream didn't clear up.
That's amazing. You got to trace back. I go, where the hell did I... Aha, the rugby bench.
And then I started... I'll just tell you, I played for the same team about a year later. By this time, I was on regional television, BBC. You know, so lots of people knew my face. And we went down to play a team of miners in a little mining town in the middle of Yorkshire. And they'd all come, literally in those days, they'd come up from the pit after the midday shift on Saturday. And we all came from the posh town of Ilkley Moor by a tat, so a lot of our lads drove up in nice little sports cars. So these miners take one look at it and they go, hey, you're going to have these lads, have them for tea. And I'm at the back of the line out, playing flanker, and I'm at the back of the line out. About 10 minutes into the game, one of them nudges his mate and says, hey, it's that twat off TV. And for the rest of the match, they said, I could hear them say, hey, look great when he goes on Monday morning with a black eye. And the rest of the match, they're coming through the line out. Oh. So, it kept you very nimble on your feet.
Yeah, oh, that's fantastic. Oh, so they mark you because you're on TV, you see?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, bash the guy on TV.
But you're no stranger to South Africa. You were a correspondent here. So yeah. Do you have a South African rugby team loyalty, or do you go watch matches when you're around it?
Yeah, I've got a season ticket at Harlequins in the Premiership, and I go and watch Saracens, who've got a lot of good South African boys playing for them, and I'm big mates with Francois Pienaar, and I'm on the board of his charity, Make a Difference, which is a fantastic charity and raises money to help, you know, leaders of tomorrow, disadvantaged, bright kids who haven't had a chance, try and put them through good education. So, you know, and through Francois, I know a lot of the South African rugby player. I interviewed him when he first got into the South African side, 92, 93, before he was captain, before the World Cup, and we became mates, and he's a wonderful guy. And it's an intriguing story how his charity's called Make a Difference, and I asked him briefly, I said, why is it called Make a Difference? He said, well, we were sitting around at home, a crowd of us, and we wanted to make a difference. Said, the real truth is that when I finished playing after the World Cup here, Saracens asked me to come over to London and play for their team, and Madiba got to hear about it, and he was very close to Madiba after the World Cup. Madiba called him in before he went and said, Francois, why are you going off to this London team? Why are you deserting it? He said, no, it's my last sort of go at rugby, and I just thought I'd love to go abroad, and it'd be good for the kids and good for the family. And Madiba said, okay, Francois, but promise me, I'll let you go with my blessing, but you promise me you must come back to South Africa and you must make a difference. And he did.
Wow.
Well, that's the impact of President Mandela.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've got to do it.
Yeah, but if you work with the less fortunate, you must be spending a lot of time with the EP Kings rugby team.
Yeah. Well, they now play over in Europe, don't they?
Yes, they do, and they're still to win a match.
Yeah,
but I haven't won a single match.
I know.
I sat next to one of the players on a plane once down to Cape Town.
Yeah.
And in the first place, it's a young guy, it's 19 or 20, and he kept calling me Oom, which was really not good.
Yeah,
for
we don't like that.
No, but I know what it means.
So yeah, but we don't like it.
I'm not 20 years older than him, but I was Oom all the way, and he was very, very sweet boy because he'd seen me on TV, and I'm like, actually, you're the famous one because
well,
you play.
Well, at least he didn't call you Tunny.
It could have been worse. It could have been worse.
And we thought he didn't understand Afrikaans.
Yeah.
He does. He's got...
A little bit.
When we communicated at the beginning, he wrote, Senior Veer or some, or thought since, I don't know, you used some Afrikaans expression.
I've got a few.
Excuse me?
I've got a few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, can we go through them?
Well, I was lucky enough in the early days when I was working with ITM before I jumped ship to Sky when I was running the bureau down here in about 1993. My producer went off to have twins, and so I needed a new producer, and I put the word out, and I eventually got a response from a girl called Pearly Hubert.
I know.
Wow.
Pearly, who is a legend.
Yes.
And Pearly was a young reporter who'd been working for Max Dupriere on Frey Blatt. She was an ex-Marty. She's a Bura Macy from Wellington. She'd been a Marty and gone to Stellenbosch. And she came up into my office in Joburg, and I said, why would you, an Afrikaner girl, want to work for an Engelsman like me? Mm-hmm. She said, oh, no. She said, it would be delicious. I thought, well, anybody thinks it would be delicious working with me. I've got to hire her. Anyway, so I hired her. She turns out to be one of the great women on earth, one of the biggest forces of nature, one of the most honest and brilliant journalists you've come across. And I was amazed at the contact she opened up that I didn't have before in the Afrikaans world as well as the rest of South African world. And I remember one day she's on the phone, and I know who I've asked her to get in contact with, and it was in the old apartheid days, and it was General van der Merwe, who was head of South African Police Force. And she picks up the phone, and I understood enough Afrikaans for her to hear her say, hello, Sarge. Hello, Sergeant. She calls the general and chatters away. And eventually she comes off the phone and she said, yeah, he'll do the interview. And I said, how the hell did you get him to do that? And she said, ah, sit lelika, praat mooi. Yeah?
Ek sit lekker en praat mooi.
Sit lelika, sit ugly.
Sit lelik.
Sit lelik.
Ah, yes.
Sit. Sorry. Sit ugly, talk pretty. She said,
oh.
She says it's something only a girl can do.
Yeah. Sit lelik, praat mooi.
Sit lelik, praat mooi. Yeah. Not bad. It was a good stab.
I've never found that it works for me, though.
No.
No.
Only a girl curly. Can do it. She's got it. Yeah.
Mel, do you want to go through some words with Jeremy that he should know in Afrikaans?
Some words? So you've got the basic negatives, neer dankie.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gatvol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Praat Afrikaans of how you're back. That's still... When I see that T-shirt, I get this... Like, didn't they have just a T-shirt that says, I'm a bit of a dick?
Yeah.
Why would you walk around with a speak Afrikaans or shut up T-shirt? It's one of the weird anomalies of life.
Yeah. No, yeah, no, it's always been a good one. And I always like plus minus. So you say, I'm going to see this farmer in the Free State. Ach, yeah, you go down the N1, and then you come to a big tree, and then you turn left, and it's kind of plus minus 100K.
Is that a very South African experience?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
Like holding thumbs.
Oh.
We cross fingers, you hold thumbs.
And now, now?
Now, just now.
No, no, net, no.
Yeah.
We don't even understand the now, now, just now, all the time.
Yeah, see, now.
Now.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
now.
I didn't know about the plus minus. That's nice.
Plus minus is very, I always think of going down dirt tracks, unmetalled roads for miles and miles, and just in the back of my head, someone said, ach, you'll find me, it's plus minus 100. And you get to a farm gate, and you go, well, that must be it.
It's easier than to say than approximately.
Yes.
Plus minus.
Yeah.
Ungefähr.
But we say that directly in Afrikaans as well. Plus minus.
Plus minus.
Yeah.
So plus minus 5 minutes. Yeah. That's interesting.
So you know what I mean.
Yeah. As any other
Not that I can think of immediately. Is there any? Is there
lekker.
Lekker, obviously. Lekker. I mean,
that's
lekker.
A very
good. Lekker I use all the time. Lekker slaap. Go to, you know, good sleep. Lani I've always liked, which is very Cape Flats.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Lani. In fact, what did you say? No, I'll come
but
back.
But when Pearlie said it would be delicious, didn't she say lekker? Because that's actually what she meant, lekker.
No, yeah, she did, but she said delicious.
Oh, she translated it, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Because lekker you throw in anyway. Lekker and och in front of every sentence. Och, yeah, man.
And mos. I did that mos. With
mos. The
mos. I had mos. I did a stand-up gig in Reno in Nevada. And afterwards, my friend told me it was cool, but you said mos 7 times. And
nobody in the crowd.
That's very Cape Townian, eh?
I've only been living there for 2 years. I couldn't have picked it up so that fast.
In an English sentence, you said mos.
Yeah, so I mos went there, and then we mos went out together.
And it's actually so wrong, because that is like assuming the next person knows what you're talking
it's
about.
It's taking an Afrikaans grammatical error and transposing it to a different language. Yes, so it's like a double grammar. Yes.
I was mosing.
No, I remember that we used to go to this restaurant, an Italian restaurant in Sea Point, whenever we were in Cape Town. Miserable old Italian ran it. Brilliant Cape Flats guy called Stephen was sort of maitre d', who always, in between popping buttons, would, and being off his face, would come, and when we started the meal, he would always say, "Bon appetit, Olanis."
Ah.
Bon appetit, Olanis.
Yeah. Mm. Very Cape.
Yeah. We've listened to your Portsmouth Orchestra.
Symphonia.
Jesus.
Can we export it?
Sorry?
Can we export it here?
What?
This Portsmouth Symphonia.
I don't think we should. Remember when you entered, it was the false orchestra.
I know.
Yeah,
we don't want to. My teeth went.
Yeah. We all like that. But I brought another song as well, which I want to share a little bit with, just for a bit of a break. I watched a movie that's actually quite bad called Pop Star, Dream Your Dream or something.
It's just the
Andy
Samberg.
Yes. But there's one song where it's just totally ridiculous, where he sings about Osama bin Laden. Can you remember that? Finest Girl. It's called Finest Girl. And then this is now a hit in the movie. It's like, it's out there.
Finest girl I ever met in my whole life. Wanna take her home, make her my wife. She was a freak when she started talking. She said, "Fuck me like we fucked Bin Laden." Ooh, that girl was a freak. She said she wanted me to fuck her harder than the military. Fuck Bin Laden. Fuck Bin Laden. Fuck Bin Laden. She wanted to fuck me harder than the U.S. government. Fuck Bin Laden.
She was a freaky kind of girl, kept up on current events from all around the world. More specifically, one event. The time Osama bin Laden got shot in the head. She said, "Do me like that," but I couldn't track the metaphor. That said, "I can see you horny like a stegosaur." That said again, your request is so irregular. She put on a beard, I started looking at the exit door. Then a turban, then a tunic. She said, "Invade my cave with your special unit." I said he wasn't in a cave, but there was no stopping. She demanded that I fuck her like we
fuck bin Laden. Fuck bin Laden.
Night vision, they can see us through my GoPro. She tried to negotiate, I said that's a no-no. Now I'm creeping in her bedroom like, go, go. She tells me to go, go. Then looks down and says, "I gotta terrorize that pussy. Gotta terrorize that pussy."
Okay, so I have forgotten that we got a distinguished guest in the studio. So we're quickly going to fade this. But that's the example of the kind of a comedy in that movie. It's the songs are funny. For the rest, it's a bit manufactured, but it's something to watch if you want to. Is there a message there, honey?
Well, we've got one message. It's Matt.
Matt.
Yeah, hello, Yola Amal.
Hello everyone.
Hello.
Hi man. Groete uit New Zealand. So
greetings from New Zealand.
Luister altyd Saterdag na julle terwyl ons huis skoon maak. So they listen to the show. It's Saturday there already. So they listen to the show while cleaning house.
Okay.
Yes.
So they're cleaning the house now.
And then there's also a
message. Mr. Spot,
Jakarta Media had asked for people listening to the show to send in questions that they might have.
If you have questions for Jeremy Thompson, please send them. But, you know, this is a podcast as well, Jeremy, so people will be able to hear this over and over until the end of their lives, this specific
fantastic
show.
Fantastic, yeah.
It's not gone. It's
no, well, it's a privilege to be on an X-rated show.
No, it's my pleasure. I thought, you know, you wouldn't be able to say things on another show, so yeah, you can do it.
No, you're right.
I just have one more fact before we continue, and that is that in wherever in South Korea, the Olympic Games, I can't remember the name of the place now. Anyway, in that place, city, what... The Norwegians ordered 1,500 eggs for the athletes.
True.
But they made a mistake because in Korean, apparently, you write things differently. So they got 15,000 eggs, which they are now trying to eat very quickly.
Mm. So there was an advert on South African television always that the catchphrase was eggs, give you the edge. So maybe
the Norwegians do really well in this
they've
Olympics.
Got a lot of edge.
They've got a lot of edge.
Oh, yes.
They might be.
Yeah, the ski jump could be interesting, couldn't it? Very. All those eggs.
Would this count as an anabolic steroid if it's an extra bit of jet propulsion?
Yeah, a lot of eggs. Like, who do you fancy in from Britain in the Olympics? Have you got stars who will maybe have gold medals?
Do you know, I've got no idea.
Really?
Yeah. I can do Summer Olympics, but I've never really been into the Winter Olympics.
Okay.
I like warm weather.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a really snowy sort of guy. So, I mean, I shall let it drift by me without taking any great interest when there's cricket on the television and England are playing Wales in the Six Nations rugby tomorrow, which kind of takes precedence, really.
I understand.
Over curling.
Over curling, yeah, no, staggeringly so, and even over Kim Jong-un,
yeah,
who might make an appearance in some form or another, and start at the Fourth World War or something.
Yeah, but you will come in incognito or something, but yeah, no, South Africa as well, they don't know about the Winter Olympics,
no.
Really, as you heard, we've got one guy there.
No, Drakensberg's quite a small area.
Yeah, yeah, so it's not that specifically important for us. You know what? I want to tell you a story why I invited you to the show. Because what happened was, years ago, in the year of our Lord, 2010, I think, or 2009, why would you have come to South Africa then? For the soccer, maybe? Did you come for the soccer?
I did come for the World Cup. I came for the start of the World Cup, which has been 2010.
What it was.
But actually, I come every year, because I come on holiday even if I don't come to work.
Okay.
And then I actually came in 2007 to do a documentary on Nelson Mandela, which for Sky. And then I came to the World Cup, and then I ended up being involved coming back to do the Pistorius trial and to do the sort of last year of Mandela's life and his funeral and so on. So I've still spent quite a lot of time here, even though I was based here 20-odd years ago.
But I was on a Virgin flight with you in 2010. You sat across from me.
Aha.
Then you got up to go to the loo.
Yeah.
And I then also wanted to go, so I went next. So you came out and in nervousness, because... I think my mind froze or tilted. I don't know what the fuck happened. I said, "Hello, Mr. Sharp." Because I thought, I'm so fantastic now to say that. And you stopped me and said, "No, I'm Mr. Thompson. I'm not Mr. Sharp."
Well, I took over from Mr. Sharp years before.
I
he's a mate of mine, yeah.
Yeah, but I knew you were Jeremy Thompson.
Yeah.
But I was so nervous. It's high in the air. And I just wanted to show him I know who he is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I said the wrong name. So I rushed into the toilet. I banged my head. No.
That's what it was. I thought the wings were coming off.
So I said to myself, if I have the privilege one day to tell you the story, I would. And so now I can do that.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Well, that's very wonderful. Nice.
But you were here every year. You were here for a couple of years for, was it for Sky?
I came, the very first time I came to South Africa, I was ITN sports correspondent. I came to do the first...
ITN.
For ITN, I came to do the first England Rebel cricket tour in 1982.
Oh,
long, long time ago. So yes. 35 years ago plus. And that's when I first... And Peter Sharp was the ITN correspondent. And because there were a lot of stories going on, he said, could I come down and do the Rebel cricket tour story? Because he had lots of political stuff going on, which is why where we kind of first got to know each other, Peter and I. So, yeah, your confusion is completely understandable because we, you know, we kind of filled the same space.
Yeah, but I was very angry with myself, you know.
And then I came down again. I covered Mandela's release from Lusaka with the ANC in exile in 1990. And then yes. I became the ITN correspondent in 91, up through the Kadesa talks, and right the way through the end of 93, when Sky, who was just sort of starting out in life, came and poached me and asked me if I'd like to jump ship and open up a bureau here. So I opened up a Sky bureau here, end of 93, beginning of 94, and stayed through till late in 95, and then I went and opened up a US bureau in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
But I, after the election, they wanted me to go to Washington end of 94, and I said, no, I have to do the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
So I kind of forced the issue. And I was glad it did.
That was the magic World Cup.
It transcended sport and everything else. It was an extraordinary story. And I still think it was sort of kind of that perfect storm moment when everything came together for South Africa. I'm not sure you've ever recaptured it quite, but for a moment, were enlightened and reconciled for that couple of hours and for the time afterwards.
Yes.
And it was way more than rugby.
It must have been incredible. That's a very fascinating period of time in South Africa's history.
Brilliant.
And to be able to communicate that to the rest of the world.
For me, and you know, so I've been a journo for 50 years, started in a little local newspaper, never thought I'd sort of end up on TV. To end up covering one of the most extraordinary stories of our time, the last half century, is incredible. I mean, I just say it's an extraordinary privilege, and for me, it's by far the most exciting and exhilarating series of stories, the sequence of stories that I've ever covered in all those years. And I've been lucky enough, I've seen some amazing pieces of history, good, bad, ugly, and indifferent around the world, from, you know, Gulf Wars and Iraq and Balkans and Tiananmen Square and you name it, tsunamis and earthquakes and the genocide in Rwanda. I mean, some dreadful and awful and amazing things. But the period of 4 years I spent here watching what I never thought I would see happen in my lifetime, which was the end of apartheid. Mm. I grew up as a kid thinking there'd always be a Cold War, there'd always be the troubles in Northern Ireland, and there'd always be apartheid and always be the struggle. So to chronicle it as a modern day chronicler and to tell big chunks of the world about this extraordinary story from the front line is, you know, it's a hell of an honor, really. I mean, at times we got a bit near the action, it was, you know, dangerous and dodgy and so on. But I remember Mandela sort of, you know, later in life telling me, he said, you know, you foreign correspondents are a really crucial part of it because people may not know or remember, but I mean, when I first came here, our bureau in the early 90s and when I came here in the 80s was down in Auckland Park, because we had to feed all our stories back to London from SABC censors watching over it.
Wow.
Because they would stop us putting stories out. The local media was almost completely censored for years until the early 90s. So we used to smuggle tapes out and send them out on planes and get them out. So the story was kept alive. And what Mandela said to me was that the efforts of you guys, you foreign correspondents, keeping the story out there, keeping foreign governments interested, putting the pressure on, was all part of the struggle that finally came to fruition.
Wow.
So, you know, I feel that I'm a tiny, weeny little part of South African history, and you know, blood was spilt over me, and I got the dirt of the country under my nails in the townships and in the Ciskei massacre and places like that. You know, I saw it in the raw and the ugliest and most violent. So it's pretty close to my heart. You know, if there's a second country outside England, it's South Africa for me. So a chunk of it's in the book, and I hope it sort of reflects how I feel about it.
Absolutely.
And I remember, just one more thing, I remember that World Cup final in 95. I took my wife, and I was sort of working, but I sort of actually got some tickets, and we cried. We wept because it meant so much. It was so emotional, that match and that.
Oh, when Madiba came on, my God. We were all crying.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic.
I'm an Englishman and I cried, man, for your country.
But let me ask Melt and Hannes and myself, not Gavin, because Gavin is not an Afrikaner, but he speaks Afrikaans. Hey. But you know, the change also came from when we were young.
Really?
Because
in Ventersdorp,
you
think especially.
No. But I know. We got two Afrikaners in this country, the racist right wing, and then us, beautiful people. So we must explain that there was a change amongst us as well. I mean, how would you explain the Afrikaner to Jeremy?
Yes, it's difficult because the Afrikaner is actually easier to analyze retrospectively. Because what you were saying now, everything was censored. Mm. Nowadays, when people go, how could you support a system like that? How could your parents support it? My folks really didn't know what was going on. I remember 10, 15 years ago, I sat with my dad here in Randburg, and we were just having dinner, and there was an office party. And I remember the setup. It was two black guys, two colored guys, two Indian guys, two white guys. And it was just an office party. And at some point, my dad just went, you see, apartheid was daarom 'n klomp kak gewees. Just at the age of 65, when my dad kind of went, and they got angry because the church was telling him this is the way it's supposed to be. They were unaware of what was happening with vlakplaas and township violence. They really thought that the government was protecting them from what was labeled savages and people who wanted to just take their liberty from them. But the problem for me is that kind of Afrikaner nationalism, I'm starting to see it bubble up again. There are people like us, as you say, we will be branded as the Pinkos and the Liptards and the whatever, while all of a sudden now being proudly Afrikaans and immovable and claiming your history is becoming a trendy thing. And it pissed my picky off.
I think it just proves all over again how strong that indoctrination was, is that it's still kind of simmering because parents are still teaching it to their kids who have no reason to have anything to do with it.
A 60-year-old racist, I can understand. A 14-year-old one breaks my heart because you've grown up in a world where it's not supposed to be.
It's interesting. I mean, I think I've reflected in the book, but Ian Robbie, who, no relation to John Robbie, but was my cameraman for many years, super guy. He grew up in Zimbabwe, a Scottish dad and so on, and came down here. He's one of the great cameramen and won Emmys and Royal Television Society Awards for his camera work, and was brave and steadfast and went into all these things. And he was here long before I was, and he was filming with Peter Sharp through the 80s and early 90s. Mm. And I remember him telling me, and I was, I was gobsmacked, quite literally. He said, I'd film in townships, film what was going on, you know, the police coming in, the defence forces bashing people up and shooting and so on. And he said, I'd film that, and we'd managed to get it overseas and get it on air. But nobody here would see a frame of it. And he said, I go home and the neighbors down the street and friends and acquaintances and family would call him a liar because they said, it didn't happen, man. Mm-hmm. Why are you being this sort of foreign agent provocateur? Why are you saying that? Why are you telling these lies? He said, it's not lies. It's happening just around the corner, just down the road from you.
They don't know.
But your government and your television stations, your radios aren't allowed to put it out. They're stopped. So nobody here really knew, or very few people knew. So it was this sort of, you know, double-layered country where there were people in the know and most people who knew nothing.
Yes.
I mean, even something as simple as the fact that townships are behind hills. You can drive past, if you drive past a town, you see the old white town. There's Vryburg of Lichtenburg or Kulini. And behind the hill, that's where the biggest chunk of the people live. Like Ventersdorp. I mean, I grew up there and Ventersdorp kind of shaped my unfortunately, my political experience started at a very young age because you're surrounded by Eugene Terblanche and the Albert Beer.
That's one of the first places I ever went out to.
Sorry about that.
To interview Eugene Terblanche.
Oh.
In 1991, and he came riding in on horseback.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And I stood up, and I grabbed the reins of his horse, and I shouted out a question to him in English. And they all said, he won't speak in English. And I've got such a loud voice. He was shocked, and he replied in English. 1991, apparently it's the first time ever.
No.
His days were numbered, clearly, from then on.
Yeah.
Oh, well, because we owned the liquor store there, so we kind of fueled the fire indirectly.
The bottle dinkle.
The bottle store.
Yeah.
I went to, when I was a journalist working for a newspaper, I went to Ventersdorp, and it was me and a white photographer, so we stood outside, and he was killed like I think 2 months prior, so it was a court case and things like that, so things were hectic in Ventersdorp, but we did not know, because I'm a colored person, so we did not know if Tani Marti would accept
radio,
me.
We didn't know that.
And we stopped, and I stood in the car, and I was scared, and then I had the white photographer go in and ask permission, can my colleague, who's the writer of the article, but he's also colored, can he come in? And I went in. She said, it's fine. I went in. And I was scared because it was like, I did not know how she was going to react to me. But she gave me water and oros, Shane, in a cup.
Not an enamel cup.
No, it was a normal cup, like a cup for tea or coffee. But in a cup, she gave me like oros.
Nice. I was at school with Bia, the kid.
Did they have children?
She's an adopted child, actually.
But she,
and it's one of those things again. It's you know somebody on that level. You're spending your school days together. So you're not Eugene Terblanche's daughter. You're my friend. And then it was amazing to see how I perceived her to really change and become. She went to London to do some work, as most kids did, for a year or two, and she had a black Zulu friend, and that.
Sure.
So and then after her dad got killed, all of that just reverted back to.
Really?
Yeah, she's. We're not friends anymore.
Is she still there, or is she? Yeah.
She's still there.
Well, I'm glad she had a black Zulu friend. If she had a white Zulu friend, and
that would have been progressive. Johnny Clegg.
Yeah.
So we are actually now talking about the book. Breaking news! It's available in South Africa.
I like the title.
Books. Yeah, it's breaking news. Is a Sky creation. Dish, that breaking news thing. Hey, am I right?
Yeah, pretty
Sky
much. Yeah,
made it. Yeah. A trademark.
Oh, is it?
Mm.
I never knew that.
Yes.
Wow.
I mean, now it's on CNN and BBC.
Yeah, everybody uses it now, so I don't think it's sort of copyright,
but
they kind of got the idea of, you know, getting it out there and stopping people in their tracks to listen to the news.
Something
is
happening.
Watch it. Yeah.
And it's still like that. I see breaking news. So you are, is it at the exclusive books ready already? People can buy.
Yep.
Hoor julle mense, Afrikaans. Hoor julle mense, koop die boek, Jeremy Thompson Breaking News. He is in South Africa for a while, and you are going to Cape Town only end of Feb.
1st of March, I've got a launch there, so 15th.
They'll have water.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. At least if not. I should have taken the rain from back home. I mean, I only flew down on Wednesday. I know it was raining cats and dogs. I should have tried to bottle it and take it to Cape Town.
We took that from English as well. We say it rained.
Yeah.
Katte in honde, cats and dogs. So
right.
It's a translation. When you entered, did Jane curtsy you? Jane, who works here, did she curtsy?
She did.
I said that you are royalty from England.
She did. She called me the same thing as a wonderful taxi driver called me years ago in Pakistan when I went to cover the very first election of Benazir Bhutto, and I got to the old Marriott Hotel in Islamabad, and I found this very nice driver, and I said, you know, would you like to drive me and my crew around? And he said, oh, yes, Excellency. And I knew then that I had to hire him, really. Anybody that calls me Excellency, I pretty much have to hire him.
Jane, you're hired.
Yeah, she's hired.
But let's listen to this. He was nearly, and I can't remember the country, the vice president of a country.
Sierra Leone.
Who?
Yeah.
He, Jeremy.
Yeah. Not quite vice president, but a minister.
He was asked to join.
Sure.
Do you want to tell the story? A bit of the story, very quickly?
Please.
Quick story. 1992, there's an Earth Summit in Rio where all the movers and shakers in the world are going to sort out the world's economic and environmental problems and ecological problems and save the planet, which they do every few years at huge expense and using vast amounts of aeroplane fuel and so on and defeating the whole point. Anyway, ITN said, can you find a story that kind of fits in with it? So I did a bit of research and I found the country with the poorest quality of life on Earth, which is pretty damning. And it was Sierra Leone, up in West Africa. So Ian, my camera, and I sort of said, well, I'll go and find out what it's like, how bad it is, what these people in Rio, all the toffs in Rio, need to do to save Sierra Leone. It was not easy to get from Joburg to Freetown, Sierra Leone. So we had a bit of a circuitous tour. And like something out of Evelyn Waugh novel, by the time I got there, I landed and found there'd been a coup d'etat. Uh-huh. And the president had fled because some soldiers had come down from the front line where they were fighting rebels, walked into town. The president thought it was going to be a bloodthirsty takeover, jumped on a helicopter and fled to the neighboring country. And a completely accidental president comes about who's a 24-year-old army captain called Valentine Strasser, who came down with these boys basically to get some shells for the guns because they'd run out months before. They hadn't been paid. They were wearing flip-flops, and these poor kids were being fighting a war, and they'd sent the officers down to talk to the government and say, come on, help us out here.
And the government got
scared. Yeah. So Valentine Strasser, 24, ends up as president by pure accident. So it's kind of like a wacky novel. Anyway, I go around the country where I see it. There's blood diamonds. There's all those unbelievable things you've seen. There are political prisoners beneath floorboards in a stinking cesspit under the police station. And eventually, after 3 or 4 days, I get access to Valentine Strasser, the president, who is this huge, gangling, slightly goofy guy, sitting behind a vast presidential desk, wearing Ray-Bans. Mm. And all his cabinet, his fellow officers, so they're all 24, and they're all wearing Ray-Bans, which is kind of the badge of office.
Pop stars.
So I sit in front of him, and I try to interview him, and he really hasn't got anything to say. So I stop the camera, and I say to Ian, you know, can't. So I say to Mr. President, what do you want to say to your people? He said, well, we are fed up with the corruption. I want to clean my country. I said, fantastic. So I wrote him some sentences. And I said, would you be right? Do you think you can memorize those? So we rolled the camera again. He said, I want to end corruption. You know, I want to clean up the country. I want to help my people. I said, great. Love it. Thank you very much. In the can. Help the president out. Clever. And then I said, I've got to have some images of you. You can't just, it's not good you sitting behind a big desk, man. You know, you need to be with your people. So he said, I don't know what to do. I said, trust me, I've got an idea. He said, yeah. I said, I love this image of cleaning up your country. Would you tomorrow morning be willing to go on the streets and clean it? He said, oh, all right. You mean it? So the next morning, 8 o'clock, he and his cabinet, all dressed in their smart military uniform, are out there with brushes and shovels cleaning up the streets of Freetown, surrounded by completely puzzled and bewildered. Who are going, who are these people and what are they doing? Nobody's ever cleaned the streets. Anyway, it all went well. We got a great piece. And a day later, I get a message saying the president wants to meet you. And we go up to the presidential palace, which in this tragic place where people earn about $1 a month, there's this stunning palace on the hill, which had been built by a previous president called Shaka Stevens, which is a little African story in its own right. Shaka Stevens was a sort of despotic president who got his government to build him this beautiful palace on the hill. And then a few years later, he got them to pass a law which gifted him this beautiful palace on the hill. And then he passed another piece of legislation that sold it back to the country, and they paid him millions of dollars for it.
Wow.
Anyway, so I'm sitting up there having a beer with this president who's looking pretty lost. And after a while, he said, Mr. Thompson, I want to thank you for all the help you have been. You have helped me because I'm very new to all this. And he said, so you have very good ideas. I would like you to become my Minister of Communication.
Oh, wow.
So I said, wow, well, that's really kind, Mr. President. Can you give me a day or so to think about it? And then I said to Ian, the cameraman, gap it now. Airport, gone. This could end in tears. Yeah, and we never went back to Sierra
Leone. You nearly ended up being in a Hollywood movie about this guy. And you would then be the guy from England who became communications minister. Yeah.
So was he like an aggressive sort of...
No. He looked like a little boy lost. He looked like a big heavyweight boxer who looked a bit lost, a bit dazed. He lasted about 4 or 5 years and got overthrown by some other military guys because he, needless to say, despite promising to clean the place up, got a little bit, hands in the till. the next time I heard, he'd gone to university in England, and then years later I read a snippet in a London evening paper which said, Valentine Strasser, former president of Sierra Leone, was mugged last night in Stoke Newington. So it was a pretty tragic fall from grace,
Shame. Yeah.
Anyway, it was quite a contrast with Mr. Mandela, who I'd been dealing with more often.
Yes.
Who actually was a leader.
You met him a couple of times.
Oh, quite a lot. No, yeah. I mean...
He knew you.
Well, he had the extraordinary facility and the gift to call us to learn our first names, and from the day one he called me Jeremy. And every time I'd see him, how are you, Jeremy? How are you? How's your family? How are you getting on? How nice to see you. Unbelievable, because I'm just one of hundreds. I mean, he's trying to take care of a country of 40-odd million people, and he remembered our names. Mm. And, had to admire the guy. But watching him at work and interviewing him quite often and, going on walkabouts with him and seeing him. He was an extraordinary man. And, I mean, he did drive through the evolution of this country. I think probably whether there were others around who could have done it, I don't know. It's hard to tell. I think probably not. And yet he'd always insisted to me when I talked to him that he was a team man. He was the ultimate team man. He didn't see himself as a leader. He just said... That's my skill set, and my comrades see me as some of them are good with money, others are good at this. They think I'm a good leader, so that's my bit of the team. But he never saw himself as this sort of individual way above everybody else. He just saw himself as part of a team. So actually remarkably humble in all that.
It's incredible. But of all the people you have interviewed, would you put him like in the top five of people that you admire?
Top one.
Top one, really.
Yeah. And then there's a second division and a third division.
but he is very special.
I thought he was a special person. And not, in 50 years of reporting, you can't say that many people you meet and interview really made a difference, really changed history or helped change history. A lot of people change history for the worse.
Yes.
Not that many change it for the better.
No.
And he genuinely did, and I'm not sure that many. And a lot of people have done some decent things, and some presidents and prime ministers tried very hard. Others have tried very hard to basically empty the country's coffers and pop them in their back pocket. But
I can imagine...
Luckily, we have no idea what that's like.
No. Well, you've got Zexit, we've got Brexit, America's got Trump. I mean, there's a leadership crisis going on in this country.
Well, hopefully we're first with the good news any day now. Because
I think that's why it's going to rain.
Yeah.
Celebratory rain.
I always said, but people then look at me strangely, but I said... Zuma, President Zuma, is not the ANC. He is part of a bit of... But that is not the ANC. That is not the group that was formed in 1910 or whatever.
Mm.
He went off the rails, and totally. It's going to come back again. It's going to be fine. So he's the exception.
It's funny, though, when you look at the ANC when it was started 110 years ago, the big thing that they were fighting then was not actually white oppression, but tribalism. They were trying to unite African people beyond tribalism. And it's funny, if you look at it, what actually almost brought the ANC to its knees now was tribalism.
Tribalism again.
In the form of factionalism. But it's amazing how 100 years later it still boils down to united we stand, divided we fall. That's the whole thing. Like, it's really interesting what's happening. And I always keep saying the ANC is becoming more and more like the National Party every day. They're making the same mistakes that the Nets made.
Jacob, well, who do you think they got to learn? Who do they learn from?
Yeah, they're just doing it a lot faster.
But what is nice is that Cyril Ramaphosa very well.
Well, pretty well from back in the day. Yeah, I mean, he was a big figure. I mean, he was vital to the Knesset talks and to the ability to make it happen. I mean, there were so many times I remember the Cliff Central. I mean, the country was on a cliff edge time and time again. I mean, when I think of Boy Patong, when I think of the Bishu massacre, when I think of Chris Hani's assassination, I'm convinced that really Mandela saw Hani as his successor. Mm. When Hani was killed, it became Ramaphosa, not Mbeki, who he saw as the natural successor. But hauling it back from the cliff edge, from the brink, time and time again was extraordinary. I mean, you know, day after day, I felt, you know, the tinder was dry and the blue fuse was burning, and any minute now the country could go. Mm. And people like Cyril and people like Mandela sort of managed to get out there and dampen the flame. And, I always think that period when Kadessa nearly went off the rails, when it was Cyril Ramaphosa and Rolf Meyer, who sort of formed an extraordinary bond. Largely over a fishing trip.
That's a fantastic story as well, yes.
Yeah. When, Cyril, who's now keen on trout fishing, took Rolf, who'd never been trout fishing, out to Dalstrom or Leidenberg, and said, I'll teach you how to fish, and then... Rolf got a hook caught in his finger, and Cyril took it out and dressed it and gave him some whiskey, and they sat down and became even closer buddies and figured out between them pretty much how to dig the country out the dirt and get Kadessa back on track, which is, a great little story. So,
wow.
So it's you have in your mind, you're positive about a President Ramaphosa.
Yes, I think I always saw him as a pretty positive, decent guy of integrity. I know he's been in the private sector a long time. I hope it hasn't tainted his integrity. And I'd like to think that he's made enough money that he would be able to resist corruptibility.
Exactly.
You'd hope, And I hope that he's really been biding his time and is ready to be the decent, honest broker that this country needs. It needs strong leadership, it needs to start moving forward. It's been stagnating, I think, looking in from outside, and I think it needs strong leadership.
It does.
And it needs somebody who respects the people. I mean, I think South African people are fantastic. I think they've got good hearts. They are resilient, resourceful, brilliant people, and they, through their own blood, sweat and tears, brought about proper democracy in this country. And that democracy has become a little disrespected. Because in the end, people vote in a leader to manage their country for them on their behalf. Mm. And when the people said, you're not doing such a good job, you've got to go, we need someone who looks after our interests, those leaders have got to respect the people. The people put them there. They don't put themselves there. So time to start respecting democracy again.
Mm.
That was so hard fought for and so hard won.
Absolutely.
24 years ago. And, take the country forward and start giving it a more positive spin in the public eye of the rest of the world.
Yes.
Because there's no doubt there's been a lot of raised eyebrows in the rest of the world looking in, thinking, what are they up to?
Exactly. And,
why would I invest there?
Exactly. And the spirit amongst South Africans also was, negative now for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
The people want the change now. Mm. I mean, it's always change, always the word for politicians, but they really need now to be proud again, and not be, oh my God, what's happening, and it'll be so...
Well, and to deliver on some of those promises that were made a while ago that haven't quite come to fruition yet. Education, clean water, electricity, housing, a water system, an electricity system that works, infrastructure, investment, long-term planning, it's fairly basic.
Are you interested to become Minister of Communication?
Oh, get me coat.
That is a brilliant one. Can I ask a question about breaking news? Is my two other favorite Sky present? I know the book is not about Sky, totally.
Well, it's
but
a bit about.
My other two presenters, my favorite, Jackie and Eamon, are they also featured?
Well, Eamon's gone, of course. He left. I retired sort of a year ago, and Eamon decided that he had enough of getting up at, you know, 4 that in the morning and doing breakfast shows, so he's gone on to do other things and a bit more radio and a bit more documentary. So he's not around. Jackie's still there. I saw her a few weeks ago. I went in to do Eamon's old show and talked to Sarah Jane Mee, who's now doing it, who's a lovely girl. And Jackie was there, so I had a good catch-up with them, and Sarah Jane's doing a great job. But Eamon's moved on, doing other things, doing fine. I don't think they get a huge mention in the book. I mean, no disrespect. It's just that I was out doing wars, and they were doing sport and the weather.
Yeah.
Jackie is so, like, voluptuous when she comes on. It's like, it's almost like like a conservative Naked News. You know Naked News? It's like, she just, like, you just, no, I'm very proudly gay, but when she comes on, she's just like, yes.
When she comes on, you reconsider.
Well, he's open to negotiation.
What's it like after, like, you keep saying 50 years, like, you've been interviewing people for years. What's it like being on the other side, being interviewed? Do you kind of see the way somebody interviews you, and you see the process, and you kind of criticize the way they're doing it? You would have done it differently?
Not really. No, because we all have our own. No, we all have our own different style. What I do notice is if somebody's read the book or not. You know, you get interviewed by a few people who only read the fly cover. You know? But clearly, Casper has, you know, hurled himself hard and soul into
this book. It was fascinating. And I love this kind of book. Yeah.
Good. Good. Well, I've tried to make it not too in, so it's not too in about the TV.
No.
It's about, I hope people who've been watching the news will go, wow, I didn't know that was going on behind the scenes. Wow, you know, it's a funny old game bringing news or radio or TV out there to the public. A lot of people are involved, a lot of people work very hard behind the scenes who don't ever get mentioned, you know, a lot of people, but life on the line for it, they work hard for it, you know, all sorts of strange things happen, you know. And I spent, you know, years and years traveling around the world. I did a whole chapter just on flights because I went on some wow.
Tell them about the New Year, where you had New Year three times or something.
No, twice. The Millennium. Yeah. Well, no, I was called in. The editor said, I'd fancy, you know, do you want to get involved in the Millennium? I said, yeah, sure. He said, do you want to do it twice? I said, oh, yeah, sure, yeah. What? So I flew to New Zealand, which was basic. So I flew in, got off the plane after a 26-hour flight, went to work, filmed some stuff, had a cup, fell asleep in a spaghetti bolognese or something, like you do when you're 26 hours out of kilter.
You do.
Got up and did the last sunset in the South Pacific, setting over the Millennium Islands and all those wonderful islands. And I was standing on the harbour side in Auckland, where they were ready for a big firework display at midnight, where, of course, it peed with rain.
Oh, man.
So it was a bit of a damp squid. Anyway, but wonderful pictures being beamed into us. So I sort of anchored all that bit of it. The fireworks went off, sort of fizzled a bit at midnight, and then Kiri Te Kanua sung the new millennium up on the beaches, and it's all pretty wonderful. And at 9 o'clock in the morning, I gapped it with my crew, got on an Air New Zealand flight, and flew backwards, pretty literally, in time.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, and we flew back, and you remember that old thing, the millennium bug? Do people still remember
Y2K?
All the nerdy IT people said, you know, the clocks are all going to blow up and everything's going to... So we had to put this flight down in Fiji at midnight again on the 31st in case everything shut down. So we had a couple of hours kicking our heels. Then we got on the flight again and I flew to Honolulu and I got there at about 9 o'clock on the evening of the 31st of December.
Again.
Deja vu all
Groundhog
over again.
Day.
And we raced down to the beach, and there was a camera crew waiting for me in a satellite dish, and we did the fireworks going off on Waikiki Beach, and we did midnight, and I dressed in hulas and, you know, leis, and, you know, and people came and danced, and I saw the sun come up, and I signed off at midday on the 1st, my second 1st of January,
amazing,
sipping a cocktail on the beach of Waikiki Beach and then collapsed in a heap.
Yeah, I can imagine. Your body didn't know where the hell it was.
It didn't know. It didn't know it's Dunedin from its Waikiki, man.
The real millennium
bug. I feel
bug.
Really bad. I actually spent the millennium with Malt and I can't remember anything of that. And you had two.
Oh, but I can tell you what you did.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember it perfectly.
So I bet you had enough drink to miss both.
Yeah.
So what would the script have been? Like, you were here, now I'm live, now I'm on New Zealand and whatever. And at the second one, like, what would like your intro, your leap
be? I think it was, guess what? It's me again. Anyway, it was fun. It was different, and I'll never do it again, and nobody else will ever do it again. So
I come bearing a message from the future.
Yeah.
I saw the future, and it's New Zealand.
No, I think I did say Back to the Future or you know, Back to the Past or something. Anyway, I actually lost the plot by then. I didn't know where it was.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, jet lag.
Elbow or what?
Well,
I don't believe in jet lag, you see. I've flown so far that I don't believe in it. And I have decided many years
what
ago...
What is it then?
That jet lag is the figment of the teetotaler's imagination.
The teetotaler's. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You've got to tipple a bit.
You've just got to keep yourself through. Did you read about the 56-hour flight home from Manila?
I must have.
You must have. Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
But why was it 56?
Because the BA plane kept breaking down.
Yes.
And we got stir crazy. I'm there with my camera crew and we cleaned the place out of champagne and everything else. And we hung, you know, wooden parrots and things all around the cabin. We raided first class and taken over. By about halfway through, early on, there's a lot of little Filipina maids in the back coming back to England to work with their families, all scared witless, because this plane keeps putting down and staying overnight, and they keep saying, no, we've mended it, and we, you know, we... So about the third time we take off, Mike, my cameraman, and I get the red blankets and red pillow covers. So we put the pillow covers on like a bishop's mitre, like something out of the Vatican, and we gaffer tape red blankets to our arms. And we stood at the front of working class at the back there, and as we're going down the runway, the crew have given up with us by then. They know we're lost souls. We are flapping our wings. We get 150 Filipina girls to flap and to get over being frightened witless. And we got up off the ground and we said, there we are, you see, it's fine. And they all applauded and cried. And anyway, and then about, by the time we got somewhere between Dubai and Egypt, and it broke down again, and we had another 12 hours on the tarmac. Mike and I then borrowed the stewardess's uniforms, and we did trolley dolly service for a whole section of the flight. It was good fun, and it meant we stopped being worried about it. It's just that when we got back to London, we looked like something out of Castaway, the movie. And my wife's there to greet us, and we all come out, and we've got sort of shaggy beards, and we smell because we've been in the same clothes, and we're kind of hungover four times, and we've been through a dozen different time zones. And I see my wife go, hi, oh, no. And it was the very first day that BA went from being a state-owned company to being a private company.
And that happened.
Yeah, and that happened. And some people in BA uniform came running across and with little envelopes with 100 quid in and basically said, shut up. But anyway, so flights from hell.
They've read the book, they won the 100 quid back.
Yeah.
That's extremely interesting. Yeah, I remember it now.
So a lot of silly flights, a lot of, you know.
But I just want to remind our public that we are speaking to Extra Special Jeremy Thompson.
Yay.
And he has written a book called Breaking News. And I've read it. It's wonderful. It's spellbinding. And you can actually read it again because such a lot of facts. You spoke about... Why did I think about the Pope now when you spoke? Because I remember that you were...
I went to the Holy Land.
Yeah, but you were just too late for the death. You were just away.
Oh, no. I did... The Pope and the Holy Land, I covered that when Pope John Paul went to the Holy Land, which is a great trip.
Israel, hey?
Yeah. And I remember at the end getting a very nice letter from a Roman Catholic clergyman in Ireland who said, dear Jeremy, I enjoyed it very much. I don't know if you are a Catholic, but if not, you should be. And then I ended up in Rome in 2005 for the death of Pope John Paul II, and we were on watch for hours and days and sitting on rooftops overlooking the Vatican. And I finally said to the crew after about 4 days, shh, we need a sit-down meal, you know. So we went and ordered the super meal, and I'm literally, I've got this nice bit of beef tagliata, Roman style, on the fork, driving towards my mouth when the phone goes, he's died. Dropped the out again, back to the, yeah, and 48 hours later we're still there, and then the white smoke comes up, and there's a new pope.
And then you've got to tread news water until...
Yeah, but it was interesting. I'd never done a white, you know, Sistine Chapel white smoke before. It looked grey to us. I mean, we're really quite
confused.
Is it
white now or not?
Well, it's sort of, apparently they chucked a bit more chemical on it to make it white in the end. And then my cameraman, so then when we heard it was Ratzinger, the German guy, my cameraman, being, you know, like cynical news people are, said, yeah, I knew it'd be him because there's a towel over the balcony already, just like Germans do on the beach.
I asked you to send me a name of a song because we have got a section here which we call Stoff Poopies, which means basically golden oldies.
Yeah.
And I asked, what song do you remember from years gone by? So let me just play this thing, and then I'm going to ask you to tell me about Takeshi's Castle, because they are helping us with the section.
Oh, fantastic.
And then Jeremy had some strange music, which I love, but I never knew of this.
But it's before you well them.
Stuff poopies from J.H.
So I saw this on Comedy Central called Takeshi's Castle, and I wrote about it on my website, and they actually said, well, there's a competition.
Yes.
So I said, well, let's talk about it. So what is this competition?
Well, Takeshi's Castle is one of the craziest shows on Comedy Central. It's now a Thailand version, and Rob van Vlieren is doing kind of a local commentary on it the whole time, and it's hundreds of, obviously,
very eager participants.
Eager participants going through all these obstacle courses in the hope to eventually make it all the way to Takeshi's Castle. So this competition, you need to round up your squad. So you have to get as many people as you can together.
Squad is like offers.
Yeah, like your team.
Your chummies.
Your chummies, your pala.
Your peeps.
Yeah. And then you need to mud up. And this is literally mud. We need, they want mud on you, you know, because Thailand trips don't come easy. So you must mud up like a pro. It could be one stripe of mud on your face, or you could be smothered in it. It's just up to you how much mud you want around. And then you record a war cry using your smartphone or any kind of video recorder. You capture your totally awesome Keshi crazy war cry with your friends or on your own. And then ultimately you post a video on social media and tag at Comedy Central AF. That's Africa.
Not as far.
Yes. And use the hashtags, hashtag take his castle or hashtag mud up war cry, and then you stand a chance to win big prizes. Takeshi Castle's Thailand is every Wednesday at 9 o'clock Central African Time on DSTV Channel 122. There are terms that you need to keep in mind, terms and conditions, but you stand a chance to win a trip for four to Thailand.
If you mud up.
You must mud up. Do a war cry, put it on social media, with tagging in at Comedy Central AF, and the hashtags Take His Castle and hashtag Mud Up
War Cry. Takeshi's Castle.
Takeshi's Castle.
Yeah.
Chewing gum lose its flavor on the bedpost overnight. If If your mother says don't chew it, do you swallow it in spite? Can you catch it on your tonsils? Can you heave it left and right? Let your chewing gum lose its flavour on the bedpost overnight.
I love those stops and and stuff. It's so wonderful. It's wonderful. So that is
well,
like from
a
your
very
youth.
Early memories in the late 50s, early 60s, though I'm that old. It was Skiffle, which was briefly appeared on the musical skyline and sort of disappeared again. And it was an odd mix of blues and jazz and all sorts of things, mainly played with homemade instruments. So the famous thing was the washboard bass. The washboard and then the tea chest bass, the tea chest with a broom handle and strings across. And, you know, you wore, what do you call them when you're sewing? You put them on your thumbs. You put the thimbles on the end of your fingers and scrape a washboard. And it was kind of improv music of the late 50s, early 60s.
Well,
with
I know
silly
the Stones
bands,
were heavily influenced by skiffle music.
Jimmy Page's first appearance on television was, I think, as a teenager in a skiffle band.
It's got that George Formby.
He's just happy the whole time.
Yeah. So it's a bit of folk, it's a bit of country, it's a bit of jazz, it's a bit of fun. And the other one I said to you was My Old Man's a Dustman. Which was the other one. So
I've got him.
But just this great humour in them. You know.
Yeah.
My old man's a dustman, he wears a dustman's hat.
Yeah, I love that.
When I'm cleaning windows.
Yeah, that's it. That's George Formby,
Yes.
That's pre-skipping.
Here's the dustman. Man.
That moves away your dust. Some people make a fortune, others earn a mint. My old man don't earn much. In fact, he's flipping skint. Oh, my old man's a dustman, he wears a dustman's hat. He wears gold blimey trousers and he lives in a council flat. He looks a proper nana in his great big golf nail boots. He's got such a job to pull them up, but he calls them daisy roots. Some folks give tips at Christmas and some of them forget. So when he picks their bins up, he spills some on the step. Now one old man got nasty and to the council wrote. Next time my old man went round there, he punched him up the throat. Oh, my old man, the dustman, he wears the dustman's hat.
Ah, lovely, lovely, lovely.
Well, that's different, isn't it, eh?
It is.
What constitutes core blimey trousers?
Well, big wide ones with a string round instead of a belt. Yeah, core blimey trousers. Very Cockney.
Yeah.
Well, the book is called Breaking News. You can get it on take a lot on the web. You can get it there. It's there. It's exclusive books. It's on Kindle as well, if you want it. If you want to be Lani, you can have the Kindle version. And it is an excellent book. I've still got so many questions, but our time is running out. But I quickly want you to tell South Africans something which they wouldn't know. And that is that you had a lot of power cuts in the 70s.
Yes, we had a three-day week.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, well, it was when the first round of miners' strikes started, a lot of industrial unrest. Looking back on it, it was basically the end of the Industrial Revolution. It was starting to wind down. Primary industry was starting to be overtaken by the new economies of the world, of Asia and so on. So, and the Eastern Europeans who could produce coal cheaper, gas cheaper, make ships cheaper and so on. So Britain was struggling and the unions were strong in those days, kicked up a big fuss. It was basically a showdown and it ended with a three-day week where they, you know, the unions had brought so much of the country to a standstill that they had to ration power. And I was on a local radio station at the time and we were kind of editing our tapes, our quarter-inch tapes by candlelight and having to sort of crank the machines around by hand. It was real tough. I mean, it was, you know,
it's like war.
It Yeah, it's not quite Eskom, but, you know.
No, it is. That's why I want you to tell it.
But Ted Heath, cost Ted Heath, the Conservative Prime Minister, his government, Harold Wilson came back into power as a result, because he was more sympathetic, Labour government with the unions and so on. But it was the beginning of a decade of sort of political unrest and economic unrest and union unrest, with Arthur Scargill and the flying pickets and the miners' unions being very powerful, until Maggie Thatcher basically crushed them. And some order was restored, but at quite a cost. And I was working up in the north of England then, which was obviously the industrial heartland. I drove by mills, steel mills and coal mines every day. I mean, the dark satanic mills, as they called them. And it was pretty impressive landscape for me, a kid from the soft south of England, you know, near London. And there were dark days, and a lot of those communities who relied on these single industries were broken by it, really. I mean, slowly they've evolved and come back with the new secondary industries, the service industries. They found new ways of making money. But it was tough times for a lot of Britain.
You've got a story, Hannes, about a gun in a bay.
Yes.
Because we have to round up the show now. Yes. I've got so many questions still. I'm just going to want to go through what is in the book. I'm just going to mention it. But if you can tell us that story, because it was quite funny for me.
it happened to a friend of mine who's Canadian.
Yeah.
And he was hiking with his girlfriend
in
northern Alberta. And then this huge brown bear came charging towards them. And this brown bear was clearly very, very aggravated. It was a proper grizzly. And they must have been near one of her cubs or something. And if he had not had his little jet fire Beretta pistol with him, then he would not have been alive today.
How so?
No, because it was just one shot to his girlfriend's kneecap was all it took, and then she couldn't run away, and the bear went for her. So it's the best pistol in his collection.
Fantastic story.
Oh, my
goodness. There's no time to tell the Black Mamba story. Anyway.
You can read about all kinds of stuff. There's a very classic in Britain interview with the Postbox, which I think is a stunning story. The Yorkshire Ripper.
Oh, wow.
A very good friend of Jeremy took that iconic picture of the Tiananmen Square with the guy in front of the tank.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You went through two coups in Fiji.
I interviewed a murderer, the Soham murderer.
You did, yeah.
A day before he was arrested for it.
Before you knew
when we didn't know he was a murderer.
Wow.
And
who was that?
And they sort of gave himself away in your interview, in a way.
In a way. Yeah. I think the police went back and looked at him again, and the next day they charged him with murder. And then it was two little missing girls in a rural part of the Fenlands of eastern England. It was a very tragic story. These girls disappeared. They'd been at the parents' braai on Sunday afternoon, went to get some sweeties from a local store, and vanished into thin air. 2 weeks later, this guy was charged. He was the school caretaker. And I interviewed him because he said he was the last guy to see them alive, and they'd wandered off down the road. Mm-hmm. In fact, what he'd done is taken them into his house, done what he did, and then disposed of them. It was a tragic story. But so I interviewed him, and like most psychopaths, he was a very good liar.
Mm. Yeah. You also stared death in the face more than once.
Yeah.
That's quite scary.
Very, yeah. The time to be scared is when you don't think you're scared anymore.
But that's when you're on duty, you're doing news, and then you nearly die.
I mean, it's, Rwanda, the genocide, Somalia and the Civil War, places like that, you know, the first Gulf War, the Yugoslav War, the Iraq War in 2003, where I spent a month inside in the desert, reporting, you know, presenting every day from there. Yeah, I mean, there were some scrapes. We were close.
When you have a microphone and a camera, do you have another kind of fearlessness than if you were alone and you had to walk?
Maybe this. You work as a small team. I think the cameraman probably feels not fearless, but get so absorbed in looking through the viewfinder and concentrating that you have to act as their eyes and ears. So I'm probably generally more scared because I'm guiding them around and I'm going, hey, hey, there's a man with a gun over there. Let's crack, let's get out of here, man. Let's leg it or whatever. So I'm not sure. I found myself in a state of some anxiety quite a lot, should we say.
and now you... But I've got two suggestions, if I may.
Yeah.
You have to teach people now how to do news, because I think humans would still be around for a while.
Yeah.
If you listen to headless news like Euro News, it's not that interesting. And I... as interesting as you can identify with the reader, you know. And I believe you. If you when you read the news, I believe Jeremy is not lying. Mm-hmm. This is the truth. So you actually have to teach people because you know so much now.
Well, not sure you can teach integrity, but I mean, I quite simply, if anybody wants to go into the business, that all I would say is, beware of fake news because it's a great threat to us all and threat to mainstream journalism. I simply set out to tell stories about the world in which I live as honestly and straightforwardly as I can, not to make people's minds up, but to help them make up their own minds by giving them the raw material of information and factual information that I had checked and double-checked and treble-checked. So I didn't want to make up people's minds. I never saw that as my job. I'm just a messenger, just a guy who goes out there and sees it, tries to listen to all the sides involved, tries to tell it as fairly and balanced and impartially as possible, and deliver it for you to say, there, I have the raw material. Now I can think about how I shape my view of this story that's going on.
Yes, but with the ingenuity of Sky News, where you beat the other news channels to certain points, how you brought the news quicker, that all counted very much in us watching you. I can't go on because I've got to stop. I was just going to sign there.
Breaking news.
Yeah, I've got breaking news. I've got to stop. So it was a privilege talking to you. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure coming to talk to you.
I can listen for hours.
You can, eh? At last, I can have therapy. My therapy is finished now that because I called him Mr. Sharp. So bad. Mel, thank you so much for
thank
being
you guys.
Here.
This
we'll
great.
See you tomorrow night at the comedy show. And Hannes, I'll see you tomorrow night.
Absolutely.
Gavin, you still had some news, but we'll do that next week. And Mr. Thompson, thank you. Jeremy, thank you so much.
You.
Enjoy
pleasure.
Your stay, and hopefully I'll walk into you again.
Lovely.
Yeah.
I'll remember your name.
The friendly ghost.
This is CliffCentral.com.